real this time. Okay, I'll start my little clock here because sometimes I get a little long-winded. But anyway, alcoholic van. Let me see. So it's kind of funny because the last time I was scheduled to do the 45-minute speaker, I showed up and the last speaker getter said, "Oh, I scheduled somebody else. Can you do the 10-minute? And I said, "Sure." So I finally made it to the big time. So, but little did she know, like, some of that feeling is some of the most debilitating feelings that I journey my way through in my journey of recovery, is that feeling like, of that value, like, you know, it may not be the actual reality of it, you know, but us alcoholics and, you know, I'm a drug addict too, so. We will take everything to the limit, and I'm just going to go, "Oh yeah, I'm not that good, so you didn't want to hear me." So, but anyway, let me see. I'm going to welcome the newcomers, and then the Northern Santa Barbara County guys. So. You too, Robert. I was born in that town, so, you know. Anyway. Let me see. What I really want to say is congratulations to everyone that celebrated some type of milestone of recovery. The anniversaries of the years. Congratulations. My sobriety date and my clean date is December 16th, 2002. And for that day, I'm forever grateful. I like this line because I don't say that to impress you because it impresses the hell out of me, you know. It's because if you lived a life like I lived, you know, and got into the habitual ritual patterns of living and got into the grips of addiction and alcoholism and, you know, to get to the point where, you know, your life is so miserable that you just continue to use because your life is so miserable. Like there's no point, right? But the whole time thinking like I'm worth something, I gotta do something, but I'm still gonna get loaded. So anyway, I don't know. I just really want to say a couple things about the process of me getting here is I really think, I seen something in, you know, on social media. I try to stay off that stuff, but it said, I guess it's nicotine and all kinds of different things are the gateway, you know, the gateway drug to whatever it is. And I really believe that in my story is childhood trauma is my gateway. I think the journey that, as that child in tow, going through the process of just, I love my father, but he's a very selfish, self-centered individual. And I was just on his little whirlwind of, of his life, and often think is that, I know he loved me, but, I often would reflect back and so, he doesn't love me, because he's not giving me what I want, what I need, he's not really looking into his kid's eyes and saying, I shouldn't be doing this, and so selfishness and self-centered is the root of our disease, and there's many different ways that we can avoid reality other than drinking and using. And I know that's a part of my story too. So anyway, as this process went on, it's like, I was, trauma was in my life for a while. Even like when I was 2 years old, my mom and my dad kidnapped me both twice. And two different times I was recovered by the sheriffs. And, so trauma was in my, drama was in my life long before I ever even knew what alcohol or drugs were, And so this whole thing it's like, that was when I was about 2 years old. So he remarried when I was in, just before kindergarten. So for a couple of years, I was just alone, and I was just this kid that was just in, just in the shadow of my dad's life, just doing whatever he's going to do. And, and I, you know, and so he is going to marry my stepmom. And so he goes, you know, we're going to go up to Morro Bay and we're going to go meet your new family. And I'm like, that's cool. You know, so back before seatbelts, we're in like a 64 Mustang, windows down, no seatbelt. And we're driving down Earl Lane right there by Taco Bell in Morro Bay. We're going down, we're pulling up into the house, and my stepbrothers and sisters, my two stepbrothers and my stepsister were playing in the tree. You know, I pull up and I'm all excited, you know, because I don't know what I'm doing, you know. I'm just like doing something different, you know. So I pull up to the house, you know, and we pull up. I see the kids playing in the tree, and all I hear is, he's brown. I'm like, I'm brown? Like, what's that? You know what I mean? I'm like, I have no idea. You know, and you know, it's crazy because the significance of certain things in our lives stick with us, you know. And so being alone and all of a sudden like feeling different, and then being, you know, that I didn't know where I was, into the youngest of four children. And everything was cool when the family was really good. But as soon as the drama started happening in with, you know, the parents and you know, there's one little significant thing too is like, you know, I had older brothers and stepsisters, and they also used to kick my butt every day. And I used to try to tell my dad, like, hey, they're kicking, I'm trying not to cuss. Good luck, I know. So, you know, so I keep on telling them, like, this stuff is happening, and nothing ever happened, you know. So I had to fight every day just to exist in the household, you know. And so my dad wouldn't listen to me, nothing would happen. And so obviously there's another little element of, you know, that value, that worth, that something I have to say doesn't really matter. And so, you know, when it came time for him to leave, when it came time for him to leave that marriage, you know, my stepmom said, you know, I'm sorry you're leaving. Are you, you know, she was like kind of asking me if I was all right. And I was like, I wanted to say, I'm glad to get out of here, right? But, you know, I looked at her because she was my mother, my stepmom. I didn't know any difference. And I said, no, I don't want to go, you know. So, you know, so I just went on this whole life of, you know, being an only child and just being on my own about 10 years old. Staying home at night. My dad was a musician, and I'd often cry myself to sleep at night and wonder why I was in this place, you know. And so, you know, I think this is significant towards a lot of the things, because these experiences still challenge me today. So as I go through this process, and all I really wanted was a family, you know. All I wanted was a mom, and I just wanted something, you know. I just needed that affection. I needed something, you know. And so I went through my whole, you know, childhood and, you know, young teen, you know, teen, I was like, I was drawn to the troublemakers. Why? Is because they're not judgmental, right? They're like, you want to go do that? Yes, let's go, right? So, you know, and I find out, you know, I was addicted to adrenaline, you know? I liked almost getting caught. Not getting caught, right? So anyway, fast forward, you know, so that, you know, Gateway, I was drinking Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill when I was like in third grade in Morro Bay, going to Skatemore, you know, and just doing that stuff. And, you know, I just want to say, first of all, Jules, I did everything I could to make myself uncomfortable today. I put this damn suit on and used the excuse that I was going to a Christmas party. When I went to the Christmas party, I used this as an excuse that I was going to speak at an AA meeting. You know, I was just like, why didn't I just dress like Jules and just be comfortable? And just like, you know, and just like feel like this whole aspect of it, you know. But, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has really given me a life, you know, a life that, you know, like you said, is like I had no idea that was in front of me. So, you know, moving forward, you know, I started drinking, I started using, and, you know, when I drank, you know, I turned red and got hot, and I didn't like it, you know. Tell you the truth is I did everything I could not to be out of the ability to control the safety of my well-being. So getting all drunk and hammered or doing downers or doing any of that kind of stuff was not my gig. You know what I mean? And so when I got drunk, I loved being escaping the feelings of everything and being involved with all my friends and doing the stuff. But I really did the things that kept me awake. Very alert. It's because I was a scared kid. In some ways, I still am today. You know, and you know, so navigating, you know, through all this stuff is, it's like, you know, I did everything I could just to avoid the way I felt. You know, it's because I did not feel like I was worth anything to anybody. You know, my mom left me when I was 2. My stepmom left me when I was whatever, however old. You know, my dad doesn't pay attention to me. He just, all he wants to know is how I did at practice and how the games were and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and all I really wanted was a hug. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm a man, but I love affection. You know what I mean? That affection is very important to this individual. And so when you run around life and you're just trying to fit in and belong, you know, we do all kinds of stuff to avoid the reality of the truth of letting anyone know. And I escaped a lot of that stuff through very dangerous activities, sports. You know, I was a skateboarder. I started surfing. Long story short is I had a long career of arrests at a very young age. I was on probation for 25 years, and so those little slaps on the wrist, I got a lot of those, and I was like that invisible guy that never really got in that much trouble, you know. And so, you know, I was an entrepreneur. You know, I sold the things that I like to do, and so you know, and I didn't make that much money at it. Because I needed what I needed. And I don't know if you guys can relate with this. You know, I used to work all week to pay for last week. Yeah. So anyway. Let me see, long story short, I was arrested for sales of cocaine when I was, 2 months before I graduated high school. And so I was one of those kids that like, what are you doing? You know, you have so much potential. And I'm like, leave me alone. I'm not doing anything to hurt you. And I'm like, you know, so I really know that denial is the killer, you know, at least for me, for this alcoholic, is because I never really realized what I was doing was actually hurting me. And I didn't even really focus on how important everyone else was to me in my life, but how much I was hurting everyone else when I was doing the things that I was doing. And, you know, that's just the insidious, well, the craziness of, you know, alcoholism, you know. And so, I mean, I partied a lot. I did a lot of crazy things. I started surfing, you know. I started doing things is because when I went surfing, is I realized that I wasn't being judged by a human being. So when I went out in the water, I was exercising. I was in Mother Nature. I was in something that gave me a value of something. And one of the biggest things that I really sought after is, you know, I was given a gift with talent. You know, my mom and dad, you know, they gave me some talent, you know. And I used that talent to overcome a lot of the feelings that I felt inside by being better and beating everybody. And, you know, and I was pretty successful at a lot of things, you know, but unfortunately when you win a lot, people don't like you. But I didn't care, you know, it's because my goal was to still beat you. To win. So when I got, you know, heavily into my addiction and my alcoholism, you know, I've been on my own my whole life, you know. I can figure out every game. I can figure out everything, and I'm going to figure this out on my own. And all I really got was is a bunch of disappointment. And so, let me see how much time I got here. Okay, I'm on track here. I turned into a big wave surfer. I did everything extreme. So I did everything extreme. So there's my drinking, my using. So there's that picture of that, okay? So long story short is, as I go through this life and I'm living these things and I'm trying to avoid everything, but yet I need everything, you know? And I get to this place where, you know, I get married, I have two kids, you know, I'm trying to replace all the pain I had as a kid by replacing the things that I needed, but I had no idea how to be a father or a husband. I really didn't, you know? And so then I found myself with an ex-wife and two children that I didn't see for 11 years. And so if you're out there and you don't have children in your life and you're going through some of that stuff, I got clean and sober, I think, when I was about 5 or 6 years into not seeing the kids. And so I stopped and still went 5 or 6 years without seeing my children. And so it no longer became an excuse for me to escape the feelings that were tearing me up inside, you know? But yet I didn't know how to do it. So as I go do this, this process is I'm so miserable. You know, there's this thing, you know, I became so sick and tired of being sick and tired that I was finally willing to do something. And so I got arrested for under the influence and a controlled substance and paraphernalia and a bunch of other stuff and felonies, whatever. Okay. So, but during this time I was going through this process of trying to, work the system. I was trying to figure everything out. I need to know what's over here. I need to know what's over there. What's going on back there? If I do this, can I get over there to get there? You know what I mean? I was still that worker, you know? I'm going to try to figure it out. And so so what happened was is 6 months into the process of the court process, I really believe the first spiritual awakening happened to me in the hallway of courtroom D5 in the Superior Court of San Luis Obispo. I had been up all night. I was running around the Irish Hills. I know it was December 16th, 2002. And I had been up all night. I had court date. And so I went into court. Luckily, the bailiff used to date one of my friends. So when I was falling asleep, and she came over and kicked me in the shoulder and said, in the shoe and said, you know, wake up. I don't want to take you to jail. So I'm like, I don't know if you guys ever stayed up for a long time, but it's hard to stay awake sometimes. So right before I went in there, I realized, I said, well, you know what? I've never quit drinking and using altogether. Because I always had some type of cocktail, some type of something I was going to try to do different to try to get me through, to get to the next phase, to get to the next place so I can figure this out, right? And so I finally surrendered, you know, and I said, I guess I'll quit drinking and using and I'll take this, this drug court program. And I didn't try to figure it out. I was just wounded and I was broken and I surrendered. And I said, okay, I'll do this stuff, right? And so I did it. And so long story short is I went into the thing, the judge, the prosecutor and the DA and everyone said basically that this guy's a waste of our time. He'll never get clean. And I used to party with my public defender. And so he said, I know this guy. And if he said he's going to do it, he'll do it. And when he came back out and told me that no one believed me, you know, in that back room where they make all their deals with people's lives before they come out and do the dog and pony show out in public. He told me that and I was like, I'll show you. So I stayed clean and sober out of spite, you know, to prove a lot of people wrong. Okay. So, but my point about this stuff is like, it doesn't matter what gets you here to keep you here. What matters is you stay here. Okay? And so as that newcomer mind is, as I was always thinking a different way, I never thought and with a level head. And so what happened was, as I came in here, I surrendered to the program. I started going to the treatment. I started going to meetings all the time. And then I started getting a little bit of clarity because I didn't use. And I went to my very first AA meeting December 31st. 2002, and I introduced myself as an addict because I didn't know no different. I just focused on my thing. That my reason why I'm here is because of the drug use, right? But I was in a sober living environment. They said, you need to go to a meeting. I went to a meeting. It happened to be, I call it the Lion's Den down here in Oceano. Not a big fan of them. Tell you the truth, is because I walked in there and I was this broken, hurt child inside a man's body. And I went in there and said I was a drug addict, and I got told to shut the F up. We don't want to hear an effing word that you have to say, and let's hear from someone we want to hear from. And I was like, I'm out of here. But I couldn't leave because I was here to prove those people wrong. So I say that a lot is because that guy had 18 years of sobriety. I'll leave his name anonymous. I think it's Henry T. That's not the fan of my type of recovery. We're here to show and pave the path for the people that don't know and don't understand what this thing is all about. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a drug pass. And if you don't like drugs, it's an inside issue, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're a drug addict, welcome. You belong here too. So I stayed out of spite. I used to talk about Henry all the time about what he said, but what I like to talk about now, I'm not a fan of him. There's good, bad examples in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to get called one. But you know what? I never got drunk or loaded. And I kept coming back. So if I'm a bad example, I'm still here almost 19 years later. You know what? Behaviors, yeah. Behaviors take time to change, okay? So as we go forward in this whole process, I just want to get into this recovery stuff really quick, is because this process is once I started doing the steps and got a sponsor and got into service was really big for me. You know, I started giving people rides, even though I didn't have a license, but I still had a car. Oh my God. So anyway, when you're in service, it's constant thought of other people. You know, it'd be maximum service to God, and help others. Okay, I love the big book, but I can't quote things out of here. So if you're expecting me to have a bunch of quotes out of the big book, you're not going to get it. Okay, you'll get Van's version of it. So I get into the process. I start doing the stuff. You know, I was 1, 2, 3. I'm on my 9th sponsor. Okay. But I've been with this last sponsor for about 11 years now, I think, you know? So it can happen, okay? So if you're people to people in Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Let me think here. I want to get moving forward because I got into service, okay? So when I got into service, you know, I was doing the steps I was doing everything that I thought I needed to do. And, for whatever it is in the journey of our recovery, is I really want you guys to know, as a newcomer, I was very, I thought differently, you know what I mean? And if you're new, you understand how we think. And there's always something that doesn't work in my mind. And until I let go absolutely and just did it out of faith and just didn't try to figure it out, and everything I was doing wasn't working, I still stayed anyway. And the language, the actions, the behavior started beginning to change, you know? So I got into service, and you know, I've done a lot of different things. I'm still on the Narcotics Anonymous hotline for like 18 years. You know, I know this is AA, but I've had that commitment for 18 years. And I'm in service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. We work the steps. We just do the deal. You know, and so. So when you get a little bit of time and you start getting this life and this life starts coming back to you, you know, the steps are in order for a reason, you know, and but they're necessary. And so I always look back on when I go through challenges is what am I doing wrong? Because it's always like I hear everyone else reading, spitting out this stuff out of the big book, doing all these beautiful things, and I'm like, I'm doing this wrong. I'm doing this wrong. Why do I feel the way I feel? And the reality is, it's like, I feel that way because I feel that way. You know, it's just a part of the journey that I'm on. And so the acceptance, you know, page 416, 17, and 18, all the way to 420, is some of the most... Gosh, I wasn't meaning that. 420 is about expectation, is reason why you need page 417, which is about acceptance. You know, the biggest thing that changed my life is because I was always judging myself what other people used to think of me. And when finally, when I read page 417, it says there's a bit of good and there's a bit of bad in the best of us, and there's whatever. There's a bit of good in the worst of us, and there's a whatever. Anyway, so in other words, we're all equal. Okay? So if you're good at something and look down on other people, that's not cool, right? It's because we all have something strong and something we can be proud of. But it seems like when we're alcoholics, we always focus on the things that we do bad. And so when I read that part and I said, you know what? I can surf. And my ex-father-in-law, he can't. He might be a doctor and a millionaire and has all these businesses and is the medical chief of staff of John Muir Hospital and looks down on me because I don't have a house and all this kind of stuff. And the reality is, it's like, that is not Van. I did not do good in school. I got a learning disability. I have these things that I was being judged on because somebody else is good at something that expects me to be what they thought I should be. When the fact is, this is my big, big issue, is people never looked at Van and said, how can I help you? And that's what you get in Alcoholics Anonymous. You get people that love you unconditionally and just look at you and say, you know, that big pit, like, you know, whatever. We jump in the pit with each other and say, hey, I've been here before. I know how to get out of here. Okay? And we don't look down at each other. We all support each other. And as long as we're trying to do this deal. If you're in here just like messing around, you pretty soon they're going to stop helping you. And don't take it personal. Okay? Because there's people that need their time. So going forward real quick, as I started doing the surfing thing and I started a nonprofit organization and a surf school, and I help a lot of people and I've changed a lot of lives with surfing. You know, we've done medical studies on the curriculum that I've created. Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to help a lot of people with the principles that we learn in here. And just doing and building relationships, being vulnerable, honest, you know, and just doing the things that are necessary. And I use the ocean and surfing to help people. God's given me an opportunity to work and share his love with other people through a different way besides sitting here in a pew and, you know, praying and all that kind of stuff. But I do that every once in a while. I'm not against it, but anyway, so I started doing this and I started feeling really good. I got remarried, had a kid, and it's still hard, you know. It's hard to have a good, healthy relationship. It takes a lot of commitment. It takes a lot of compromise and a lot of sacrifice. And if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, you don't want to give in. Damn it. You know? But I want to be a father to my child, and I want to be a husband to my wife. You know, and it's not easy, you know. Just like being a friend in recovery, you know, having relationships, you know, intimately or non-intimately, they're difficult, you know, and we're humans. So anyway, I started feeling really good and I started doing my thing, and you know, the years go by, and You know, and when there's a lot of pain and a lot of things going on, it's like I still have, you know, I still misbehave a little bit, right? And I get very driven. So this part of the, my share, what time do I have to quit? What time is it though? I mean, what time do I supposed to end? You're supposed to know this stuff. Okay. Okay, so anyway, so I go into the stuff, I'm doing the thing, I'm being of service, I'm trying to do my best, and what's happening is I start dealing with a bunch of people that are outside this program. I started an organization that nobody's in recovery, nobody gets what I'm trying to do, okay? So my feelings are getting hurt. And I've always said in the beginning, dealing with the feeling is healing. It's because when I found out when I got here, I was dealing with a bunch of feelings, and I didn't know how to deal with them, so I dealt with them in a negative, hurtful, harmful way. And I had to learn to come in here and learn different ways to deal with those feelings, not let them control me and how I should act because I didn't want to feel them. You know? And so when something comes up, you get embarrassed, just like me right now wearing the suit, you know? I came here and everyone's all, you look nice. And I'm like, you have no idea how uncomfortable I am right now. So I start doing this thing, and I'm very driven. And I started trying to control people. I started to try to control the outcomes of different things. I wanted things faster than they're happening. I wanted things like, don't you get it? And so like the whole process of me doing all this stuff, here I am in recovery. And I'm doing these things, and I'm trying to teach these beautiful spiritual principles in my businesses and stuff, and I just have no patience. You know, I'm not being kind. It's because I want to help all these people, and you're not doing what I want. So what started happening is I started trying to like make my feelings the most important thing to everybody else. Like the way I felt, you need to know why, and I'm gonna tell you why. And if you don't get it, I'm out of here. But I can never leave because I started this damn thing, right? It's because I'm just an unsatisfied alcoholic. Still. I still want things when I want it, how I want it. Trying to play God, even though like I have this somewhat of a head on my shoulders today and I'm misbehaving. And so, you know, and if anyone knows me, I can be very intense. And I work with a very sensitive population. So people aren't doing what I want so I can take care of all these people and all this kind of stuff's going on. And so when I go do my work, I'm a little bit on edge. And so I upset you. So what happened is I got in trouble. And the reason why I'm saying this today is because I think one of the best messages somebody with long-term sobriety can do in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is admit that I'm not doing good. Admit that I make mistakes. Admit that I need to keep working on things to be a better human being, to be kind, to do the things that I need to do. And I think that's one of the most important things is because I've done a lot of things to get a lot of accolades and feel a lot really good, but ultimately I started misbehaving again. I started just being a dick. More, I was trying to control things. And so, you know, I listened to a bunch of things and, you know, and the third step in prayer is, it's like I was praying for my, for my character defects and my shortcomings to be removed, you know, and I was removing the things that I needed when the fact is these character defects that I was still acting out were hurting and affecting other people. Because it says what stands in our way of our usefulness to helping others, you know? And the 11th, you know, the St. Francis prayers, to love instead of be loved, to understand instead of be understood. And, you know, I wasn't acting like that, you know. And so, you know, I got in trouble. I'm still on a leave of absence right now. Luckily, a paid leave of absence. But what it's given me is it's given me an opportunity to mix some things up. I'm seeing other people, you know, and getting other directions. I still have my same sponsor, but I'm hearing different perspectives of different things, because sometimes I need to hear things differently. I need to hear a different message. And so when I spoke about and was honest in the meeting after you, Mr. Kelly, spoke about every time that I've come into a meeting, every time I've had a problem, I went into a meeting and I've shared about it, I haven't got drunk or loaded. And so I said, you know what? I was going to let my pride and ego get in the way of being honest and letting everyone know how I was feeling. And so what happened was, is I got connected with that Irish guy. And anyway, so he came up and talked to me. He goes, you know, after the meeting, he goes, man, you're operating out of fear. And I thought, damn it, I know it, you know. And he's all, I'm speaking in Ventura tomorrow. I'm inviting you to come with me. I've never done nothing with Seamus before. Oh, whoops. So I said, I'll do it. So I go in there, and so we go on this trip. He starts talking about this, and you know, and I'm a self-reliant human being, you know, and so I do a lot of things on my own, which can be really hurtful to other people, right? And so as I go on, and I'm going on this trip, he really emphasizes that step 6 and 7 is my problem right now. And so I refocus on step 6 and 7. You know, and I'm going through this whole aspect thing. And the other thing is that I'm doing, I'm seeking outside help. I'm seeing 2 psychologists and a therapist. Not just 1, 3. And it's challenging, it's difficult, you know, it's because, you know, the psychologists want to push drugs on you. And I believe in my work that I do is there's a lot of problems connected to people prescribing drugs. And I think there's a lot of other ways holistically that we can figure out different ways to find the things of it. And that's going to be my problem going into this stuff, is because I don't want to take drugs. And I believe there's other ways to do different things. And so I'm not going to get into any of that kind of stuff. But what I'm trying to say is I became willing to do things that I wasn't willing to do in the past. And so I'm doing those things. I'm doing the next step to try to be a better human being, just like I made that commitment to come into Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous to be a better human being. And so when I started this process and started doing these things, I started realizing that I have a really hard time working with people. So I started going to Al-Anon. My humility got my hand halfway up when they said, any Al-Anons in here today? And I raised my hand up because I just started two weeks ago. You know, and for this alcoholic right now, it is a beautiful message for me to hear, because I need to detach with love. I need to be able to detach from certain things that I'm trying to control and not feel like a failure. And so just by being willing to do things in this journey of recovery, you'll never know what type of message you're going to hear from who. And so I'm excited. I don't want to do the work, but I know that this is a program of action. And the only way you're going to get the results is by doing the work, you know? And so I'm putting my foot forward, doing this stuff, doing what I find is necessary. And I'm kicking and scratching and kicking more. But I want to be a better human being. I don't want people to say, Van, you owe that person an amends. You know, I'm like, I wasn't being mean, but my energy and my intensity really affects people a lot. And that's what I need to be aware of. My intentions are to help, but yet I'm hurting. That's a hard pill to swallow when all you're trying to do is help people. And you're frustrated by all of them and all of this and all of that. But the reality is it's contingent on my daily reprieve of my spiritual conditioning. The ultimate thing is prayer, my higher power. And so as I've been focusing on all this stuff and talking to different people, you know, different things have been coming out. And, you know, one of the best spiritual growth thing I can do is when I fall, get back up. And admit when I fall, when I'm wrong, get back up. Get back up. So if you're new, just get back up. You know, and if you're fairly new, long time, and you're struggling, you know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. This is just my story. You know what I mean? All I know is like, it's important for me to be an example that you can go through a lot of painful things, a lot of embarrassing things, and a lot of ego crushing things and stay clean and sober. But the only way I'm going to find peace is with divine intervention from my spiritual connection with God. That's the only way I'm going to get it. And so that's my focus, you know. And since I see one of my old sponsors here, the main thing is don't get loaded no matter what. I left out the F word. But I'm going to tell you what, when I heard the F word with that, it made sense, and I became willing to do that because the F word was in it. But I'm being respectful. And I am trying to do what is necessary. But so where I'm at today is, the bottom line is I did not want to come and speak here tonight. I thought I was going to cry. That got me going. It's because I'm still broken inside, you know. I'm still that kid that needs a damn hug. And I can't be this outward male that I don't need it. You know? I'm not ashamed of being who I am today. And the biggest thing about that is like when I've finally realized that I need to stop being who everyone thinks I need to be and be who I am, is when I find joy. Because it's really easy for an alcoholic to feel like shit because somebody is not happy with what you're doing is because they think you should be doing something else. So, on a happy note, I still have joy, is because I'm not drunk and loaded. I'm still helping. I'm still married. I spend amazing time with my daughter now because I'm not working. And I have to catch myself saying I don't want to do this. Instead of, I get to do this. And I am so blessed, you know, to be in a position that I'm in today, you know. And if I never would have made that decision in the hallway of courtroom D5, December 16, 2002, I would have cut myself so short. And it took the law. It took a lot of bad stuff to happen in order for me to even start this process. You know, I got really nervous tonight is because two people walked in here tonight that really had to see a lot of my addiction. And I'm so glad you're here. Because I'm no longer that person. I'm the man that stands in front of you today to be open, honest, vulnerable, and teachable. And the only way I get that is with the help of you and my God. So that's all I got. Thank you very much.
big round of applause for Ben.